Greetings, urban farmers, gardeners, and healthy food visionaries. Farmer Greg here, and welcome to the 810th episode of the Urban Farm Podcast, where every day we work together to educate and inspire you to become part of your food revolution.
Today on our podcast, we have someone who is helping gardeners weed out toxins from their gardens. We're talking with Randy Ritchie about why gardening must change. Randy lives happily with his wife on their urban farm nestled in the Santa Monica Mountains. He grew up in Pacific Palisades, California, and graduated from Pepperdine University in Malibu. Randy is a Christian, a father of three, an entrepreneur, a disruptor, screenwriter, author, garden lecturer, eco-landscaper, organic farmer, podcast host, and the founder of Malibu Compost and Number Two Organics. He loves gardening, surfing, great music, healthy food, being and staying healthy, and telling everyone that he can the truth about real organics and living a healthy lifestyle. Welcome to the show today, Randy. Are you ready to rock?
I'm ready. I'm ready to go.
Let's do it. So I shared a bit about you. Can you fill in the blanks for us and share more about the path you took to get where you're at today?
That's been a very interesting path, and thank you for having me. I actually started out as a screenwriter. Worked in the writing field for a long time professionally. And prior to that, as I was growing up as a kid, I got very interested in landscape architecture on a project that happened at my folks' house. And then a real good friend of mine was a great landscape architect in the 70s and 80s. And I did a lot of work with him as a kid, just hauling stuff and doing stuff and hanging out.
Cool.
Yeah, and it was good. And then learned a lot of great photography things for landscape photography with him. And at one point, there was a writer's strike. I had a couple little kids. One of my other friends said, hey, you want to shoot a portfolio for me? I'm like, sure. So I shot a portfolio. It turned out beautiful. And they got a ton of extra work. He said, hey, do you want to come in and sell some more work? I sold some more work. Then he said, hey, I know you have a background. You want to help run some of these jobs? Now we have too many jobs. And I'm like, sure. I'm like, when I'm not on the strike line, I'll go landscaping. Uh-huh. So that kind of is where that happened. And that company became super successful. And I ended up being a part of that company. And that's where, during the work that we were doing, I met this guy named Alan York, who was a viticulturist over at Benziger Vineyards up in Sonoma. Mm-hmm. And that's where I first learned about biodynamic compost. And that was a total game changer for me. I remember walking the vineyard with Alan. It's funny how I met him anyway. I called him. I saw him in the Wine Spectator magazine. I called the vineyard and he actually picked up the phone. And I was like, what? Wow. So I said, hey, can I come see your compost? And he's like, yeah, but you better get up here soon because I'm leaving for Chile tomorrow in a couple of days to go get, I think he had 3 or 4 days before he was going to head out country to go start a new vineyard. So I just jumped in the car and got up there. And I remember putting my hands in his compost. And when I did, it was one of those moments. I just was like out of body experience. I didn't know why, but my whole life was going to change. I just knew that holding his compost in my hand. And I'm like,
wow,
this is alive. This is something very different than I, as a landscaper, have ever used in my life. So it was cool. And that, and one thing led to another, started making compost, started using it on my landscape jobs. And then I had a lot of people asking me, hey, where can I get some of that compost? and the great thing about it is I reached out to Alan because as a landscaper, I couldn't find any good compost. And this is like in the 1980s. I could not find any. I found kind of what was inert, dead soil, maybe, but nothing that you would look at and go, wow, this is going to be a game changer. And when I read the article about him in the Wine Spectator magazine, and I realized he was talking about soil fertility and soil health, it really was a game changer for me. And then meeting him was one of the great things in my life. Another one of those people that you meet along the path and go, wow, that guy really changed my space on this planet. Yeah. And he was the first guy ever too that I ever really saw an insectary really in full bloom, just going on this big vineyard. And it was one of his favorite parts of the vineyard. And so for me, he was telling me, he told me, he said, hey, you should have one of these on every one of your landscapes. And I remember looking at that going, yeah, he's right. I should. And we were one of the first landscapers out here to be growing food on every job, making food part of the environment, the ecoscape.
So your adventure into farming started out as a landscaper, landscaping people's yards?
Yeah, and designing and managing. And then once I met Alan, started making compost on a farm in up in the Fresno area, and then people wanting to buy it, it led me to go, wow, we're making really good compost. Then we had to find a farm to make compost on. That was the shift. And then that shifted me out and more over into farming and more into larger land management and manure management. And the next thing I know, we're creating Malibu compost. And we had a bunch of people that wanted to invest in it. And we had, and everybody was going like, you're nuts. You're like, you're going to be a composter now? And I'm like, yeah, that's what I want to do. And that's what I want to get healthy soil into everybody, healthy compost into everyone's yard. And that changed everything. And then Malibu Compost became the first biodynamic, what I call real organic, non-GMO compost in a bag that you could get. And we were able to raise the money to do it. We were able to amazingly get distribution into the markets across America. And it just seems like, it seems like one of those things where everything fell into place in the right way because we were doing the right thing and it just all happened.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Wow. All right. So you said several things I want to tease apart a little bit before we jump into your book, which is really the reason we want to talk. But what is an insectary for our listeners that don't know?
It's an area of planting on a property that draws insects, beneficial insects and pollinators into the garden. And so it was very interesting to see on a large vineyard, this incredible space with all sorts of native plants and flowering plants and see just this amazing amount of life in terms of bees and birds and other insects all over the place. And I was just, we were walking through that. And I remember just looking at that and going, this reminds me a lot of the natural spaces in, near the Santa Monica Mountains, like where I live. And we have a ton of pollinators and a ton of birds and a ton of wildlife, like right where the back of where I'm sitting from right now at our little urban farm has, we're loaded with tons of birds. We've got a massive beehive and an old oak next to us.
Nice.
Yeah, we have just amazing. We're in a butterfly path during the migration for the year. So, you know, I just started going, wow, that makes so much sense. Yes, we should do this. Right? I should do this on every job and kind of demand that, hey, if you're going to grow food, you're going to do this. Then we also have to create life beyond just a beautiful landscape and beautiful planting. We need to create additional life in your yard.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Lisa Ziegler, she's a flower farmer on the East Coast. She's been on the podcast a couple of times. And she says 20% of your garden should be for pollinators, flowers and...
Love that. Love that idea. On our place, we grow a lot of food too. So we have different, like we have cottage gardens. We have some native gardens up on the hill. We have an orchard. Got a lot of raised beds here too. So we do a lot of food production. My wife is a raw foodie. We do a lot of raw food, a lot of juicing, worm bins that we use the juice pulp in. And just so we're trying to create as much just natural, nothing goes to waste and no space goes to waste.
Amen to that for sure. All right, next question. What is biodynamic compost?
So biodynamics is the grandfather, in my view, of organic gardening. Rudolf Steiner in the 20s started looking at the farm as a closed loop system, looked at soil as a living organism, and started looking at how what we'll call natural flower preparations that you inoculate the compost with when you first put it down, which adds biology and vigor and adds a lot of energy to the compost. And that's what Alan was making. And I was really interested in that because they were also making some biodynamic wines. So again, pieces came together. So for me, Steiner's interesting. He has a, you can look, read up about his lectures and his books. He's very interesting. There's a whole train of philosophy that called anthroposophy that is behind them. I'm not a follower. I'm just a person who thinks what Steiner did was really interesting. And I felt like the biological inoculation was, I felt really important. And I know that from all the compost that I've used in my life, once I started using this compost and then making this compost, the biological energy, the microbial energy of this compost is unparalleled.
Wow. And all right. So that really leads to the next question. And that is, why is compost, especially biologically active compost, so important?
When I teach gardening classes, my organic gardening classes, I always talk to people about, I'm like, hey, so just as a disclaimer, I care more about your soil than your plant. So in case you want to leave now, just giving you a heads up.
Right.
So for me, if we're not growing soil, then we're not really doing the best we can do for our garden, because it's really about growing the biology, building up your microbial populations, bringing in your soil animals, allowing the organic matter that you are putting into your garden and that you have in your garden and that falls as leaf litter and stuff. If that's not being decomposed and mineralized, then you're wasting the best part of the garden. And for me, most farmers, most gardeners, they miss the boat because they don't know that soil is everything. They focus on everything else in the world but soil. And for me, that's where it all happens. If you have healthy soil, you will have healthy plants, unless that plant is not supposed to live there, period.
Exactly. Really, my whole attitude about this is without healthy soil, why bother?
Exactly. So for me, being a landscaper, I learned how to do everything wrong, in my view today. I'm grateful for the guys that taught me, but they used what they knew, and what they knew was very limited. And I just kept, in my world, we kept pushing the envelope of trying new stuff and trying new things. And ultimately, the biggest change for me ever was utilizing the biodynamic compost that we started to make and then bag on my projects. My landscape projects had just, there was a life and an energy there that you just didn't see on the other projects.
It's a game changer, isn't it?
It 100%.
Yeah.
100%.
So all this leads to you accumulating all this data about a particular way that we farm and garden in our country and really in the world. And a book came out of that. So can you tell us the pathway that happened and what the book is?
Yeah, yes, great question. The book is 100 Years of Deception, Why Gardening Must Change. And I think the fact that I started out as a landscaper, and as we were discussing a second ago, I knew how to do things in the wrong way. Once I started to learn and see what happened when I was using good compost and using other kinds of biological inoculants and using beneficial insects and doing all these things that I never did as a young landscaper, I saw just beautiful gardens coming up everywhere and that were prolific and that were healthy, and they didn't have the pest issues, the fungal issues, the different issues that so many gardens have. And so I started thinking back to, why is everyone so hooked on chemicals and pesticides and herbicides and fungicides? And why is that always the answer when people walk into a nursery? It's the grab, it's like the top ramen type of, just to add water, the fastest solution, right? So I was thinking about all of that, and I started to look at it and go, we're just not educated. And most people that are in the industry don't really know, because they don't really use enough biology to know that you can grow differently. You can do it differently. And I went back and I started, so when did this all start to change? And it all started changing over 100 years ago when the Haber-Bosch method started and they created ammonium out of compressing natural gas out of the air. And ammonium became this thing that was now going to feed, they had a new word, the whole new terminology. We're going to feed a hungry world. And that is something they still talk about today at the UN. We're going to feed a hungry world. And now they're doing it not only with fertilizer, they're doing it with GMO crops. They're doing it with all kinds of pesticide-laden crops that you can get anywhere. And so instead of us staying with what fertilized and grew food for centuries, we're now all of a sudden going to go, hey, we're going to feed the hungry world because we have the miracle of chemistry. And when what happened was BASF was the first company that had hired Haber and Bosch. And those guys have a long, amazing history of chemical agriculture and then chemical gardening. And what's happened is that the people, the products that we use in the nursery industry and in the garden industry all have come from chemicals that were introduced in the agricultural industry. So we're dealing with the offshoots from Big Chem and Big Ag, which are controlled. And I talk about this in the book. Gardeners don't know they're being controlled by big money. One of my other passions is I follow the markets. I follow every morning. I watch financial news just, you know, when I'm after I pray and meditate, I just take a quick peek to see what's happening because those things dictate in our modern life what happens to us and how governments make policy and how politicians vote and how what companies are going to put out in terms of products. And we were talking earlier a little bit just off mic about the G20 and about the COP27. And we have all of these different global organizations that are making decisions for us about food and about soil and about ecology. And not one of them solution is to fix the soil with healthy biology.
Yeah.
Why? That's why I wrote the book.
Nice. And the book is called 100 Years of Deception, Why Gardening Must Change. All right. So in it, you talk about what is organic. What does that mean to you?
First, let's start here. What's considered organic is what the National Organic Program tells us is organic. So for me, when I say all the time, real organic on my Instagram, I hashtag real organic all the time because I don't believe that organic is organic. Because I've had tens of thousands of students in classes. When I start the class, I go, hey, how many of you guys are organic gardeners? Everybody raises their hand. I go, that's awesome. Then we talk about, I go, how many of you guys know the difference between an organic tomato and a non-organic tomato when you go to Trader Joe's or some other market, right? And they all go, I go, how many of you guys fully understand like why that tomato might be a buck or $2 or $3 more, depending on the season? And then people start to shake their head. And I go, how many of you guys know who runs the organic program in the United States and now the world? And then they're all like, is it the USDA? And I go, yeah, USDA organic. I go, but do you know who? That would be the AMS, the Agricultural Marketing Services. And then they all go,
okay, what's that? So I'm doing the same thing over here. Okay, what's that?
Okay, so the Agricultural Marketing Services, think about this, runs the National Organic Program of the United States and of basically the world now. Right. A marketing service, right? Why? Marketing equals money.
I know.
I love the fact that we went organic and that we've tried to be organic and we tried to follow Europe. But what happened is we, with the best of intentions, I think, politically, they tried to make it so that the tree huggers and the conventional farmers could all come together in a kumbaya moment and have this organic program. But the problem is both parties have to have their own seat at their own table. You have to have an organic side and you have to have a conventional side if you're going to do those two things. You can't meld the two. And that's why I am always fighting and talking to people like, okay, so you guys go to the nursery, you buy a bag of potting soil, and the humus component in there is chicken manure. Where did the chicken manure come from? And they go, I don't know. And I go, okay, well, it's marked as organic, the bag, but it came from a conventional chicken farm. And then everybody goes, how does that work? And I go, the National Organic Program and the Standards Board have recognized the fact that you can use conventional manures once they're composted, allegedly, in organic food production. And everybody goes, but how does that work? And I go, it doesn't really work, but that's what the regulations are. And so I'm always telling people, even though I have a compost company, I'm always like, hey guys, you got to make compost at home. If you have land, get some chickens. Use your own chickens.
Amen like, to that.
Yeah. But people are like, but you have a compost company. Why are you telling us to make compost? I'm like, because you'll never make enough at home for what you need if you garden the way I garden. And you can always use a bag of mine if you can find it as a supplement. Find good compost as a supplement. But really buy something that's real organic. And then I take it a step further and I go, in organic agriculture, everything that's organic is also supposed to be non-GMO. Since we started our company, we've been running genetic IDs on our compost and for over 15 years. And they're expensive, but they let me know there's no GMO corn, soy, or alfalfa in our compost. And that's what they feed conventional animals. Why don't I use that? Because those crops are all Roundup ready and are sprayed with glyphosate.
We've started having this problem where people are taking horse and cow manure that's non-organic, that was fed glyphosate on the plants, and people are putting that on their gardens and it's killing their gardens.
100%.
Yeah.
100%. You're absolutely right. It's happening. And I keep telling people, guys, it's the health crisis that's coming now in this world. If you don't have your health, you have nothing. Yeah. And if you don't have your health, and you're not focusing your garden on your health, since it's your sacred space at home, then what are you doing? And so I'm always saying to people, please just find out your sources. If you have organic food at your store, find out the garden, the farm it came from. What are they doing there? I go to my local farmer's market. I ask those guys, how are you growing? What's your fertilizer? What are you guys doing? Mm-hmm. And a lot of times I find guys that are good, and I find guys that like, that's not really organic. And then we have that conversation. They go, yeah, but it's allowed. But I go, yeah, but it's not really, it's not really organic. You're like, you're skirting an issue. I have two colors when it comes to this. It's black and it's white. And so it's you're in or you're out. You're in the pool or you're out.
So what does true organic mean to you then?
I like real organic because true organic, there's some products called that and other stuff that I'm not really a huge fan of.
Perfect.
But so real organic to me means that they're actually farm-made, non-GMO, can be tested for that. I run toxicology panels on stuff, so I know if there's any herbicide residue, fungicide residue, pesticide residue. I want to know, because I think that the consumers believe when they buy organic, they're getting something that's healthy, it's better, it tastes better, it's regulated. I want the government to go down that path where we have something that's real organic. Not great at math, but I want 150% organic.
All right. You're not passionate about this at all, are you?
No. No, I don't wake up thinking about this or stay up at night thinking about this.
All right. So you wrote this book, and I'm assuming you did research.
Lots. And there's, if you look in the back of the book, you can see just tons of great articles and books and stuff you can look up. Same as me. There's a lot of great people I've met on this journey. So I put some of their work in there. So once you start down the rabbit hole, there's a lot.
Right. What is one of the most striking things that you discovered through this process of writing your book?
A lot of things are so political today. People are afraid to tell the truth.
Yeah.
And so there were certain publishers that I thought would be a slam dunk that I even got even taken in by my friends who had books there. And they were terrified of this book. And I was like,
ooh, you're doing something good.
Yeah, I'm thinking to myself like, okay, that's deflating in one sense. In the other sense, you're right. I feel like, hey, I must be doing something right.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's like the biggest thing I learned, that, wow, everything is political. Everyone's scared to rock the boat today.
Yeah, and we need to absolutely be rocking the boat around food.
100%. Like for me, I'll tell you a quick story. Please. I got the COVID when it first happened. I was up at the Flower and Garden Show in Seattle. It broke out in Kirkland, one town over from where I was. the town went on shutdown. We left an event where there had been 60,000 people over 5 days.
Wow.
And I went to a Whole Foods afterwards to get something, right? Some salad, something, anything, right? After the show. And it was empty. The shelves were empty. I called my wife and I said, "Hey, love, is there something going on in Seattle? Because like Whole Foods is empty." She goes, "Are you near Kirkland?" And I said, "Yeah." She goes, "There's a pandemic. There's a health crisis going on. You got to get out of there." And I'm like, "Okay." Yeah, I got in my car and I left. And then what happened was I got home. I had that first COVID, you know, and I got so sick. And what happened to me was I coughed and coughed, talked to my uncle, who's a pulmonary surgeon. He said, "Don't go to the hospital. You got to cough through this. We don't know what we're dealing with yet." Yeah. I figured like, okay, this guy teaches at Ohio State, probably knows what he's talking about. So I stayed home, got through it. But what happened was a couple years later, I got scar tissue in my lung from the coughing. Mm-hmm. And my heart couldn't push the fluid out one day. And I had to be rushed to the hospital. I got congestive heart failure from long COVID. And when my cardiologist came in to meet me, and this guy is great, and I talk about it at the intro to the book, Dr. A, he comes in and he's yelling at me. He's like, "If you don't listen to me, you're going to die. I have all these patients dying right now because you guys don't listen, blah, blah." And I'm thinking like,
"Wait, hold on. I'll listen."
Yeah. I go, I'm listening. I'm going to listen. And he said to me, and then he looks at my chart and he goes, "Oh, you eat organic food. You're an organic farmer. Oh, you pray and you meditate. You know what? I think these are some of the reasons that you're alive. And I had 11 guys with very similar stats to you in the last month that have not made it."
Wow.
And I went, "Wow." And he goes, "And I am not a tree hugger. I'm not an organic food eater, but I think with your age, your height, your weight, all this stuff, I think that's what saved you."
Yeah.
I also think personally for me, I'm like, "Hey, I believe in God. I think God saved me, but I think I have more work to do here." But, and he and I have become great friends, and I'm a success story now with him because I've, my heart. So I tell people in my classes all the time, and anytime I get a chance to talk, I go, "Hey, you're not crazy. If you think you want to buy organic and you're going to spend the extra money and you're really going to do it, then really do it, because by me really doing it, it kept me alive, I believe, and just go ahead and do it." So when I went in there to the emergency room, my heart was pumping at 21. Normal is 50, right? So at 20, you're dead. When I went back 9 months later, after being on a program with a doctor and being on my, changing even my food program even more hardcore, I was at 32. I just saw him 2 weeks ago. My heart's pumping at 45. At 50, it's normal. And he said, "I think you're going to be one of those miracles that get back to over 50.
Wow.
So, I mean.
By eating organic and living right. Yeah.
I think so.
It takes a little more effort. In some cases, it takes a lot more effort, but that's the difference it can make.
Yeah, it's like what Joel Salatin says when people say, "Hey, eating organic and growing organic is expensive." And he says, "Hey, have you tried cancer?" It's true. So for me, see, that's another part of the book. I choose what I spend money on. Yeah. Do I really need 4 caramel, frappuccino, holiday pumpkin spice lattes every week with the gingerbread iced glacé frosting? Do I need that? And then when I add all that up every year, what am I spending?
Oh my God, an obscene amount. This is a Dave Ramsey conversation right here.
Yeah, and then I'm spending $2,000 on heart disease.
Yeah.
So if I drink the juices my wife gives me, if I shoot ginger shots and turmeric and cayenne pepper, and I take a good walk every day, and I go out into my garden and I trim a little bit here and move a little soil here, and hey, that's not costing me the $2,000 I'm spending on all that other garbage. So
in a big way, it's just, what choices are we making in life?
Yeah. And that's part of what I'm also asking in the book, the nursery buyers, like, "Hey, you guys, if you demanded better, we get better. Hey, consumer, if you demanded better, we get better. But if you take what they're just dishing out, unless they find this show or they do the research like I've done or you do, you're not going to find people that are making really great, like beyond the level organic products, right? You're not going to find those people. You have to do the research to find them. I'm lucky that we're sold in 700 stores across the country, right? But
nice.
We're an anomaly in that way. And that's just because there is no great biodynamic, real organic, non-GMO compost in a bag. Like, you can't get it unless you get our stuff.
Wow.
And that's fairly specific.
Yeah, exactly. And there's one other thing that you do, and I want to touch on this before we shift, and it's called compost tea.
Yes.
So can you tell us what that is and about a time you used it on a client's property?
Compost tea is a huge game changer. So for anyone who out there of your listeners who's never, or your watchers who's never used compost tea, it changed my whole universe in terms of landscaping and then farming and then gardening. Mm-hmm. The guy, when I met Alan, he said, "Are you using compost tea in your projects?" And I said, "No." And he goes, "I think you really should." Gave me a recipe, told me how to make it. And I had a project where in Malibu, on a big property, they had a Myoporm hedge. And on the 2 acres, half of the hedge was dying. And this is about a 15, 16 foot hedge. So to replace it would have cost $80,000, right? Yeah. Like a lot of money. So he gave me this recipe for compost tea, and he gave me a recipe to make a tree paste with some compost, which I did. So I made the and then I started putting compost tea at the base of, as a drench of all of the affected Myoporm, and then I sprayed all of them. So my guys on my landscape crew were like, "He's gone wacko. This is not going to work. This is, but whatever. We'll let him do what he wants to do, and then we'll all go see it didn't work." What happened was 2.5 weeks later, the dieback stopped, and I saw new growth coming out of some of the tips of some of the hedges. And I went, "Oh, wow." Then we did another application of tea and another foliar spray. Then about a month in, they started filling back in, and the dieback was done. They were not dying back at all anymore. That hedge is still there today, and that was 20-something years ago.
Wow.
So I was instantly, I went, "Oh, wow, was that trip worth it up to meet Alan?" And then I was already making compost, and it just changed my whole. And then I realized, okay, so I'm using biology that has really good compost, has all the major and minor nutrients and trace minerals in it. It's finished. When I put it in a liquid form, I'm getting all that nutrient at the root level for absorption into the plant out of the rhizosphere, right? And I realized also, I also have a bunch of smaller bacteria and stuff in here that are going to be used as a food source for the other biology. I'm feeding the soil and feeding the plant, can uptake the nutrient really easily. And boom, for me, that became a whole opening, a whole game changer.
Yeah. Wow.
Amazing. I was blown away.
You have a lifetime of experience to share. And I suspect that's in big part what you put in the book, right?
Exactly. I talk about that. I talk about what the truth is about potting soil. Potting soil is nothing more than a Julia Child's recipe, really soil, right? We're making recipes, right? And all the different components that are in there, like, why are they in there? And are some of them better than others? And what do I really think? And I tell you, and I tell people about compost tea, and I tell people about some biological inoculation. And I tell people about why I don't like city municipal green waste, why I don't use it, and why I have been around a lot of composters having a compost company. Mm-hmm. I've seen a lot of municipal composting operations, and I'm like, "Hey, where does all that material come from?" "Oh, it comes from the green bin that there's a big collection site." And yeah, you might have some organic gardeners, you know, out there that are really gardening organically. But then you also have the guy that buys the 5 gallons of poison every time it goes on sale at the depot. And he's out there just killing anything that looks like a weed or anything that looks like it's moving that could be a bug. He's killing it, and it all goes back into the green bin. Yeah. So the pool gets tainted. So for me, I talk about all those types of things.
Nice. 100 years of deception, why gardening must change. It's available wherever you buy books.
On Amazon. It's on Amazon book. It's an Amazon book. And that's been nice. It's been an Amazon bestseller in multiple gardening categories since it launched. So I'm really happy people are finding
it. Congrats. Congratulations, man. That's awesome.
Thank you.
Awesome. So I'm going to shift on you, and I'd like for you to talk about a time you failed, how you overcame that failure, and what you might have learned from it.
I'll tell you something, an area that I believe that it goes back to compost tea. We made compost tea sachets that we would sell in the nurseries all over the place. And I wanted to give people what I just told you guys, you have to use compost tea. So I'd go teach a class, everybody would buy compost tea, the stores would sell out. But then I would go teach the people in the nursery about compost tea, and it would sit on the shelf. And at some nurseries, it would sell because there was a big organic clientele. But at most nurseries, at like 70 to 80%, it would sit there until I went back to do a class. And I would give all the people in the nurseries their own compost teas to go home and try. They all thought it was the greatest thing in the world, but nobody ever remembered to sell it. And so I never got that message out the way I wanted to. And finally, we're pulling that product because I'm just teaching people. Actually, in the next book, I'm teaching people all the methods I use on the thousands of acres that we grow on and how to make compost tea yourself. Really easy, really simple, multiple recipes. I didn't succeed with that one.
Yeah.
You know, that was a product. We've succeeded with a lot of products, but that one, it just never sold a lot, but not enough. And it just was, since it was my favorite thing, it really hit me in the gut.
Yeah. And you pivoted. And you're doing something different now. That's the learning from it.
Exactly.
And what do you consider your biggest success?
I would say being open enough to the way my life works. I think God gives you direction. He gives me direction because I pray and stuff, right?
Yeah.
So for me, I think I was given direction to go meet Alan and learn about this thing, about this compost that I had no idea what it was. And then once I saw it and I touched it, to know this is a game changer.
Yeah.
And then to learn how to do it, which I had no idea, and I did. And then to learn how to take that to a large scale composting company and then put it in a bag and use my branding skills that I learned as a student at Pepperdine that I'd never used because that was my major, advertising and marketing. And then take those branding skills and then create a brand that went out, became a national brand. I'm like, wow, that's like a really amazing thing from inspiration to a market, right?
Yeah, over 25 years?
It's been that long. And I've had the company 15 years. I've been doing it for over 25 years, but yeah.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
And what drives you?
I think my relationship with God, one. And then I think I have an incredible family. I have an amazing wife. I have amazing daughters. I think just being in a space where love is the most important thing. And I think that in this world today, that message of love that we really need to be handing out in as many scoopfuls as all of us can, in any way we can, I think is paramount.
And I'm gonna step out on a limb here a little bit, including our politicians.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. 100%. Like I talk a lot about politicians and I talk about a lot about the government. And I feel like our government, all sides have failed us. I really believe that. And I really believe that it's the individual that makes up the citizenry and that really that's why I keep begging people, please buy real organic. Please demand that your market get rid of, you know, the pesticide killing fields and get real stuff that's real organic from local farmers who can grow real organic. Bring their stuff in. Support those guys, please. That's what I implore people to do.
Yeah, amen to that. And if you could recommend one book for our listeners, what would it be and why?
This is an odd one because this is one of my favorites. This is a book called Botanical Shakespeare.
Wow. And never heard of that one before.
Yeah, it's by Garrett, Gerit Quealy, Quealy. And it's just an amazing book. The foreword's by Helen Mirren. I love reading through this and just picking out stuff. And sometimes I'll throw some quotes on my podcast or in my garden class. I'll read some Shakespeare.
Nice. And I'm going to throw a additional question at you that you're prepared for because we didn't get it above earlier. Okay. And that is, what is your number one gardening tip?
It has to be make your own compost at home. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Please make compost and use nothing with chemicals in it, because then your inputs are all organic too, and you can make your own great compost. We make great green waste compost here at our little spot in the Santa Monica Mountains and use a ton of it. My wife and I love composting.
Nice. So I guess, and that actually may answer, I'm going to give you another opportunity here. What is your final piece of advice for our listeners? It may be the same thing.
Well,
or not.
I would say take that compost and then throw a couple handfuls into a nut bag and make your own compost tea at home and start using it a lot and do what I do. Go out with a cup of coffee and your watering can and just hit those babies up with some compost tea.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. It's been a delight chatting with you. Thank you so much for joining us on the show today, Randy.
100%. Loved it. Thank you.
So you have, let's see, you have information on your composting company. You have information on your book and your podcast. Can you share all that with us?
Yes. The book is 100 Years of Deception, Why Gardening Must Change, available on Amazon. My company is Malibu Compost, and that's Malibu like the city and compost. And then I've got Number Two Organics, which is number spelled out, and then two and organics. Mm-hmm. On Instagram, I'm at Malibu Composter. And our new website for our books and all kinds of other stuff and our podcast and everything is called thehealthygardenlifestyle.com.
Nice. And that's the name of your podcast, right?
It's the Healthy Garden.
Nice. Awesome. Thank you so much. And you can also find show notes from today's podcast at urbanfarm.org/Randy Ritchie.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode of the Urban Farm Podcast. Remember to listen for tips, advice, and resources to help you on your journey with urban farming. You can find us on the web at urbanfarm.org or send us an email to podcast@urbanfarm.org. In the words of Vincent Van Gogh, great things are done by a series of small things brought together. Be encouraged that with each lesson learned and skill developed, you are one step closer in the direction of your dreams.